You're behind my son's death.
Madam President, I have your husband. You will have your forces withdrawn from around my country, Sangala, immediately and permanently. Or your husband will die a slow and certain death.
I just wanted to make sure that you are still coming to dinner tonight.
Marika, I can't. I'll make it up to you. If you're looking for Marika, she's not with me.
I'm looking for you, Samuel, or whatever your real name is. Now, I don't know who you really are, and I don't care. I just want you out of my sister's life.
Keep an incident quiet until what Jack and I are doing goes down.
What incident?
Vossler's dead. Jack killed him at the hotel on 18th and Reagan. It was self-defense.
Damn it, Renee. What the hell are you doing with this guy? We're supposed to bring suspects in, not murder them.
Until we know who Dubaku's source is there, you've got to handle this outside of the Bureau.
Dubaku is the only person with the names of the people who betrayed you within your government. It's imperative that we find him.
You resigned from government service, and the Senate regards you as having been a renegade agent. How am I supposed to know where your loyalties really lie?
With all due respect, Madam President, ask around.
I got an address for Henry Taylor.
Get an ambulance!
The following takes place between 4 p.m.
Hi, this is David Fury, the writer of this ninth hour of the seventh day in Jack's very complicated life.
Hi, my name's Hakeem K. Kazim, and I play Ike. Or Ike Dubaku.
Yeah, nobody calls you Ike.
No,
they?
No one calls me Ike. It's just Ike Dubaku.
You should kill someone for killing you Ike. For calling you Ike. You say, it's Ike.
I think I did, actually.
Did you? That's nice. And here we are. The interesting thing, the first interesting thing I can say about this episode is that it is the first episode we did after a very long writer strike.
Yes, I remember that.
And it was about 6 months between the time we started talking about this episode, what this episode would be, and by the time it actually shot it. So no one was working on it, obviously, during the strike. But this was almost like a new season premiere for us because we'd been away from the show for a while. And so this episode was sort of important. We had to kind of get back on our feet and kind of get the momentum back. And we did not really have a story that was working when we broke right before the strike. So pulling this together and helping to set up with the rest of the story was really important.
And it was pretty weird for me as an anchor, actually, having that sort of break and coming back into it, you know, having to really sort of refocus and reset my feet and... just re-get into the character again.
And practice your African accent.
Yeah, practice my African accent, obviously.
Yeah. It's very hard. The break was very hard for everyone. I mean, just for so many reasons economically, but also just creatively, just to remind us where we were and just start cold. But we managed to do the story, and the other interesting thing about the story is we had a version of the story very much at the beginning of the season. We had talked about what is your character, Dubaku. We called him something else like that, like, Kimbate or something. Right. And he was going to have an American girlfriend and was going to be leaving to go to his country, which was now going through a coup to take it over. And this is where she learns that he is this despot. And Jack enlists her help in stopping him from leaving the country. And that was a very, very early idea that we abandoned when we abandoned the Africa story early in the season. The fact that we were able to find a new place for it just shows you how fluid the show works. I mean, you're just finding for those interesting scenes.
But there was a change there. I mean, there was a period when you guys were thinking about him having a Hispanic girlfriend.
Yes, that's right. We were right. We're very multicultural here. And we thought, hey, maybe this is an opportunity for Hispanic. Actually, he's mad to this Hispanic woman. I think the decision came later that... it just made more sense if she's African American, there's less of a backstory that needs to be told about how these two came together. I think.
No, and it felt good from my point of view, or from my character's point of view, that because he's such a passionate Africanist,
right, a nationalist,
and believes so much in his country, that's exactly where he would go.
Right. Right. I think we were just looking at just kind of add color.
Yeah.
Add another shade, basically. But you're absolutely right. Mm. That's what works best. Without our having to reinstate her. Someone in the bureau is on. Here is Bill Buchanan is putting together his theory that that he needs to take over the Secret Service, or basically take over the protection of the president, because of the vast conspiracy within the government orchestrated by Juma and Dabaku. And really loved the idea of Bill being in charge of the president and him being responsible, because that was going to create, we knew that was going to create an interesting conflict for Jack later when he needs to break into the White House.
Madam President.
Your concerns are clear to me, Ethan, but I've made my decision.
I'm only trying to do my job.
And I do want to give some kudos to the wonderful actresses who play Marika and Rosa, who were just great, Anuka and Andy.
Here they come. This is Anuka, who plays Marika, my girlfriend. Anuka Okuma.
What are you doing here?
We need to talk. And
get a break in 20 minutes.
Well, you shot this at Universal.
Yeah, we did, and this is a scene where she, that's why I'm about to try and skip the country, and I think I want her to come with me. And it was right. Shot at, yeah, that was my first time at Universal
Studio. Oh, really? Is that
actually.
Right? That's the backlot. It looks really good.
Yeah,
it's
it looks fantastic,
and,
yeah. It's all sort of doubled for Washington, I think. So.
Yes. We had to do a lot of doubling, and sometimes it was difficult to make L.A. proper look like Washington. Mm. So using a city street at the Universal backlot was... You'll see that. You'll also see that in episode 10 with the big car crash.
Right, yeah, that's right.
You shot that at Universal, too.
But we did actually go to Washington to shoot some of the scenes. I'm not
sure. Oh, did you really? In this one?
I'm not sure if they're
in this one. It all just bleeds and you just forget.
Exactly.
Where is this?
So, I'm getting pretty irate because she's arguing away there. And,
I can't leave Rosa. I mean, she needs...
Now, have you played Africans a lot in your career?
Yeah, I mean, a lot. Yeah, in the last sort of couple of years, few years, yeah. But a mixture, really. But, yeah, in the last few years, I have.
And you're from?
I'm actually from Nigeria, originally. And so is Anuka, actually.
Is that right? Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's Nigerian, too. But it's great. I mean, I think, you know, what's been lovely is just seeing Africans in different roles now. In the last couple of years, that's beginning to happen. And, you know, and giving them more sort of... three-dimensional, making them more human, and so it's very exciting. I think it's a very exciting period in terms of both television and film to see these different people, humans come into the fray and see their lives portrayed and their humanity on the screen. So it's very exciting.
That's exactly what I was attempting to do with Marika, is give your character dimension so that. Colonel Dabaku is more than just simply our stock villain. He's a human being. He has connections. He has desire for connections to people, just like anyone else. And I think that gave an interesting dimension to him.
I really enjoyed that part of it. It was really nice to just to see a slightly sort of, as you say, a human, a slightly softer, a more real side to him. So it was very enjoyable.
And this is the first time we see this gentleman. I'm trying to remember his character's name now. I named him.
I don't know. Was I ever told his name? I'm sure I was, actually.
Well, you have that great scene with him in the hotel
later.
Where you meet with him. At any rate, this is the first real indication. This was after the strike and the long 6-month stretch where we had to start laying in, what's the next layer of the story. And remember, we didn't have, at this point, we didn't have the prequel. We didn't have Redemption.
Yes, of course, yeah.
So that story that we built into Redemption is stories that we were discovering right here in the middle of the season. We were saying, here's the opportunity for this John Voight character, Jonas Hodges, who we'll meet in a few episodes. Mm. But this is the we're setting him up right here.
Right.
But prior to it, we didn't have any idea where we were going to go.
Right.
And that's just the nature of this show. This show is very much, as I've described many times, a runaway train. And it's sort of the fun and challenge of it is just trying to stay on top of the story and build new layers so that you can find new places
definitely.
To go.
And it definitely feels like a runaway train from an actor's point of view, not quite knowing, you know, what's going to happen next, which, you know, keeps you very, very much on your toes and you know, you have to remain very, very focused within it. And
yes.
I think that's what creates the excitement of the show, actually.
I think you're right. I mean, I think it definitely adds to everyone's apprehension because they don't know what's coming. Mm. And, you know, some people think it's an awful thing for the writers to say we don't know what's coming. But in reality, that's most television. Mm. Is nobody really knows. This show in particular, because we're telling one story over 24 episodes as opposed to other series, which have the case of the week or the whether it's House, who has a patient of the week, or Missing, which has Without a Trace, which is about missing people. Mm. It's a case of the week. We're telling one long story, and consequently, to do that, it's very difficult to map out everything and not burn off story very quickly.
I must say, when I first ever saw the show, just before coming to America, a friend of mine was hooked on this show, and I was about to leave to America. He said, "You must see this show," and I sat there, and I don't think I moved for the rest of the weekend, actually. It was so gripping.
How much of it did you watch? How much of it have you seen by the time you started?
I'd seen two series, I think.
Wow, two seasons.
But I'd done it very, very quickly. First of all, seeing half a series with my friends. And then when I came here, I knew Brad, and he gave me two series.
Brad Turner, the director.
And gave me two series to... And I just sat and watched these things over few days. So it was very intense.
That is a great way to watch this show. Mm. Just seeing how it spills out. Because as a movie, we forgive a lot of things when we watch a movie, like a story, because we're so caught up in the momentum. With a television show that, you wait a week till the next episode, you have a lot to think about. And a lot of people see familiarity in some things, and I always think that's sort of a fair, unfair comparison.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the Bourne movies are the same movie.
Exactly.
They're great. They're absolutely great, but they're the same movie. Mm. How do you do basically 12 Bourne movies? Because that's what we're doing. We're doing 24 hours worth of programming.
Now, this is Rosa. This is Rosa, who's played by Andy Chapman, who is actually Marika's... sister.
Right. And her sister, who is the protective sister, who already suspects that DeBacco is not what he seems.
That's right.
And this was a scene that I wrote just to sort of set up where she's at. Nothing really happens in that scene. It just simply establishes that she has a sister. We see her for the first time, and now she's going to pack.
Right.
And this is another scene that was meant to, that's Howard Gordon's son. That's Cap. That was my suggestion too. I said, "There's a role for Cap. Play Chloe's son." We wanted to explain Chloe's presence in Washington. We knew she was still married to Morris. We knew she had a child. She said she was a stay-at-home mom earlier, and so we tried several attempts, aborted attempts to explain where Morris was. Where's Morris and the baby? Where's Morris and the baby? And what we're trying to explain here is that they're in a motel. I mean, basically, Bill Buchanan called on Chloe and said, "I need your help here." She flew out with her family, who've been living in a hotel or a motel. And while she's doing this on this day, because remember, it's all one day.
You'd be good too.
That's what they're doing. They're just waiting for her back at the ranch. But at least we established them.
You know where to find me. So they're married, right?
They're married,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Well, they were married. The thing was, when we introduced them, it turned out they were an ex-couple. They were a divorced couple.
Right.
But they've since...
Got back together.
Mm-hmm. They've since gotten back together. By the way, we're talking about director Brad Turner. We should talk about Mylon.
Mylon.
Who did actually direct this episode.
He directed quite a few of the episodes that I was in, actually. And, I had a fantastic time working with him. He's very much, I think, an actor's director. And very giving.
Well, he was an actor. Did you know that?
I think he mentioned that.
He actually, I believe he told me he had his own television show.
Yes, when he was in Canada.
Canada, yes. Mm, I think he was 19 or 8. I mean, he was a kid. He was a kid actor in Canada. So he does understand actors. He does love working with actors.
And his wife, actually, just by the way, is a wonderful writer. I read one of her books, which blew me away. But yeah, it was great working with Mylon. Really fantastic.
matter.
And we're starting to build on the Chloe and Janice meeting. You know, Janice, that people are perceiving as kind of another Chloe type, someone who's may not be socially adept. Thank you. Much like my verbiage right now, and yet they're very good at their jobs, and certainly there's going to be tension between them, and it works very well here because we know there's a mole or two or three or however we know the FBI is compromised. So suspicious looks going on between Chloe and Janice works really well. I should mention also that Mary Lynn is very pregnant in this.
No, I didn't
know that. Because when we came back from our break, she was showing quite a bit. So if you watch the scene as you're watching it right now and go back and watch it, we're masking her pregnancy. She's holding things in front of her. When she comes in, she has a bag in front of her. And she's sitting behind this, and she's wearing her coat. And we're doing everything we can to hide the fact that she is
pregnant.
Very much pregnant. And she would not. She wasn't to have her baby for another, I think, couple of months.
And this is the other character, am I right?
Janice. Yes, that's Janice, Janine. Which is great to see the two of them together because they're from Larry Sanders' show. I mean, they're a very big show here in America.
Right.
Gary Shandling had this show on HBO. And Mary Lynn replaced Janice on the show. Her character took over Janine's job on the show. So it's kind of fun for those fans to see the two of them together.
Great.
And they are good friends. I mean, they are, the two of them, in real life.
And now this is a scene where I go in and meet this character. And that's right, yeah. He's in charge of trying to get me out of the country. I've sort of given him the sort of order to arrange a plane and get me flown out of the country in the next day.
Yeah, you're giving up. Dabaku is really giving up, saying, look, I've done everything I can. I want to take my new girl, and I want to go live peacefully, in Belize and not have to worry about this. Juma, as he indicates, your boss, general, is not happy about it. Yeah, I love the scene because it just shows how smart you are. You come in,
like
you walked in,
too, yeah.
It's a couple of quick glances, and you know exactly the layout of the room. You know you're being set up, you know. It's great.
Men are here to guarantee your safety, Colonel, not to threaten it.
Guarantee my safety. How nice. And said with such sincerity.
You see, I think for me, this is Dubaku's, his whole, raison d'etre, it shows his whole sort of patriotism and as an African, and his disdain for and contempt for
that you had to deal
the
with
images of, well, just the Western, right. I think he's got for me, playing the character, that's what I sort of try to breed into it, this sort of, the arrogance of the West, and they're implying that we can't do anything without them, and so, that was the layer that I was thinking
was great.
In here.
Yeah, it comes across. That's a hotel in downtown.
Mm.
Actually, the last hotel that the Black Dahlia, do you know what the Black Dahlia was? Went back in
the film. There's a film about it.
There was a film about it. It was a very famous unsolved murder case.
Right.
And this was the hotel. The woman had her last drink, and she was last seen.
Oh wow!
So it just has that great
wonderful
LA history.
Hotel. I must say, it's
beautiful.
Really amazing hotel. And it's still a going hotel, isn't it? Downtown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. In fact, we had some people walking through the set quite a bit.
That's right. I remember.
Which I think caused
that day.
Yeah, it caused some irritation on Mylon's part. It was very hard to control the set.
Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't pleased. None of us were actually.
Yeah,
but we managed to get it done.
Yeah, then the crew, their crew was there. They made it. They made it happen.
What are you doing, Rosa?
And here's finally the sister dynamic.
We're going away from here, all of us. Well, what do you mean all? Samuel.
And we actually read when we auditioned Andy and Anuka, we actually had the two of them come in because we really thought that relationship was important to see before we cast them.
Mm.
Like who had the best rapport.
Mm. Which is what you did with Anuka, which I thought was fascinating, actually, when when you were choosing.
Oh, you came in red with her, too.
I came, yeah, and it was, I loved that. I thought it was a really interesting. It's just to find the chemistry. And I love the fact that both these girls were so different.
Yes.
And they were both fantastic. And it was just lovely to see them reading and just playing.
It was very nice of you. We don't usually do that. We don't usually, because, you know, you're so busy anyway on the set.
Yeah,
we don't
sure.
want to pull you off to help with casting. But we really thought... We really thought we got something out of it, and it was
it was really nice. Felt nice, anyway. Now this is where Jack has come to scupper the plans that I had for both of us.
Right. Well, he assumes DeBacco's here. He assumes these are bad people who are involved with him. He has no idea they're innocents. Who have no idea. Well, both he and Renee.
Mm-hmm. You know this man?
It's a very handsome picture of you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Why are you lying to me? Let me see. That's him. We know him. He calls himself a boa. Sandra LaBoa.
Shut up!
She was going to meet him to leave me.
Where were you
going
to
meet him?
Sorry, I can't help but watch this scene. It's hard to comment because I'm kind of... It's kind of... riveting to watch.
Yeah, it's intense, isn't it?
This is really watching Jack realize suddenly, wait a minute, this isn't what I expected.
Mm.
It's basically saying, oh my God, the villain has a heart. And this woman has no idea what the man
really
he loves is.
Mm.
And he knows he's about to destroy her emotionally by telling her. And that's one of those great 24 dilemmas of having to rip away the facade that he put up and break this woman's heart.
Ouch.
That's basically a way to describe the show. Ouch.
Ouch.
It's one big ouch.
It
24,
is one
ouch.
Ouch.
And if that's the worst that happens, you should feel lucky. Cause we know the body count is very high. This is a very interesting thing because there's no Secret Service anymore. The president is entirely being protected by Marines.
And this is because everybody's being compromised?
It's been compromised. Mm-hmm. We don't know who Juma has bribed to help him. So... Bill Buchanan got the president to basically dismantle temporarily the Secret Service until they can determine who's bad.
Yeah.
I think Dr. Shulman was actually, I think somebody had, in an auction, you know, charity auction or something, had bid to have their name used in a 24 episode. Because I remember we were looking for a name for, where can we use this Shulman gentleman who paid good money to have his name on 24.
That's
so
great. And here
here's
he
Dr. Shulman. Who we mentioned several times, so he gets his money worth. Wherever you are, Mr. Shulman.
Mm.
It's great to be able to bring the president somewhere else, not just physically, but emotionally. Here comes, you know, her husband who could very easily be dying. It's very difficult for Cherry. She has to be, you know, play so many scenes in the Oval Office or play so many scenes in, you know, the Situation Room. And I would imagine she appreciated it. And Combs doing a nice job as well. And this is also going to lead up to the setup. I'm sorry. I was interrupted by a character saying, excuse me, Madam President. This is actually leads up to a reason to bring back a very beloved character on the show, Aaron Pierce, Secret Service agent, who has appeared in every season of 24. He's the only one other than Jack
Keith,
Bauer, who's appeared in every season.
I know who that is, actually. I know exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Glenn Morshauer. Yeah. And we, you know, we've often tried to figure out, can we bring Glenn back in some way? We didn't feel we brought him back to good use in 6, unfortunately. And this was something that I had, I was kind of a pest about. I really thought, here we are starting back after starting the new half of the season. And I went, here's a perfect opportunity. Bill Buchanan's alone. He's relying on the Marines to help protect the president. Who is the only other person he could trust to do something for a job? And, you know, I like to think that the fans of the show, when they see him, have a little cheer, even if it's in their heads.
I'm sure they will.
That's Aaron Pierce. So it's a great little setup. And something 24 doesn't often do is a little tease saying, I know just the man, kind of. She says, do you know someone who could do that? Yes, ma'am, I think I do. And you're going, who is it going to be? And
the gates of the notorious Makatu prison.
So, again, this is something that Jack's going to say, I know who this man is. He killed a friend of mine or was responsible for a friend of mine's death. Mm-hmm. Before the strike, we didn't know that. We didn't know that there was any connection between the two. But when we knew we were going to do the prequel, which comes up about four episodes later, we shoot it like after we shoot the next four episodes, mm-hmm. we did the prequel. We knew now that Jack was going to have a personal connection to Ike Tabaku. That Jack killed his brother, and that Tabaku was hunting Jack and was responsible for Carl Benton's death in Redemption. So suddenly the season had a resonance that we'd missed with those first eight episodes.
Yeah, it gets a lot deeper, doesn't it?
So it was a, in some ways, the strike was very fortunate. Sure. Creatively, it was very fortunate for us. The season easily could have worked without it, but it works so much better with it.
Give me your phone.
In my opinion.
Why?
When he calls, I want you to answer it.
No.
Okay. And now, here we go to a very familiar scene where Jack has to talk an innocent, a civilian, into going along with a bad man, the bad guy's plan. Using someone to his own ends, which is a moral quandary for Renee. Renee does not feel comfortable, particularly on the heels of in episode eight that we did before this. Renee sort of tortured, or at least pretended to torture, this woman psychologically about harming her child.
Right.
And we're already showing, I think, that it's taken a toll on Renee, that Jack Bauer's methods are very difficult for her, as they are for Jack, but Jack's been able to close off that desperation.
Where are you?
What's wrong? You sound strange.
It was Rosa. She caught me packing, and we argued.
This is,
No.
This is where she's, basically lying to me. Going along with Jack's plan, and I'm gonna...
Yeah, she's fine.
She's sort of lying by telling the truth.
Yeah.
Because she's saying my sister caught me, she found out I had to tell her the truth, which is we're going to Belize, which she did.
And I'm thinking I'm about to deal with this, as I think this is a problem. I'm not sure.
I think there's a pause. There's a pause, but I think you're satisfied at the end.
Right.
Because I think you believe... we debated this about... But ultimately, this is a woman you love. And you want to believe her so badly that despite, I think your that expression can indicate, okay, I think I'm all right.
I think it's dealing with the sister. I do remember that. But I'm not sure if we had that in, actually. Unless before the strike, there was...
You were on the move to actually take out the sister.
Yeah.
Because she was going to create problems.
That's right. But that's changed, isn't it?
I think it changed in the course of the six-month break.
Yeah.
I think that story kind of went away.
We can get her to go meet with him.
This is, again, sort of the heart of the season, which is Jack taking Renee on the road to... what really destroyed him and his family. It's like these are the methods you have to use to get the job done, but it comes at a great cost. Comes at the cost of people you love, and it comes at and innocent people like Marika.
What are you talking about? You want her to go to him and face him?
It's the only chance we have of finding him before he disappears forever.
I'll do it.
No. Now I'm your older sister, and I won't allow it.
The other dynamic that Andy and Anouk have that's really nice is that she's almost a mother figure to her rather than a sister. There's a protective, even though obviously she's in the wheelchair, she probably needs the most care. But she perceives herself as the protector of her.
Yeah, you see that very
of her younger
so.
Sister. Mm. It's
Walker and I will be following you. We'll never be more than a mile behind. As soon as you reach the destination. That's when we'll move in.
Marika, a mile. Are you crazy?
Enough.
You heard what he said. He's a murderer. He can hurt you.
He won't.
Again, I'm caught up every time I'm watching them. I just want to cut up and watch this scene between the two. I don't know. I just think they're so wonderful together. I'm watching a play. I'm watching a really great play.
There he is, Jack. Renee said you had someone running operation support.
Yeah, she's right here. I'll put you on speaker.
And this, Jack discovers it's Chloe.
Chloe.
What do you need?
How long is it going to take you to set up a set?
You know, these little moments are very subtle, but there's always got to be a little bit of a feeling of, hooray, you know, it's Jack's going, is there someone who can help me? It's Chloe. Oh, that's fantastic. You know, better her than, you know, a new day player or somebody I don't know.
I'm sending a car to take her to him.
She's one of his operatives?
No, it's more complicated.
Part of the difficulty was finding out this part of the story, which was making us believe that Janice is the mole.
Right.
She's trying to break in to what Chloe is doing. She's looking suspicious. The audience is going, she's the mole, she's the mole. The level, how far you go with that, where it's either too subtle in some people's opinions here, or it's too overt. We're building too much into it. Eventually we find the right tone between the script and the editing and, you know, Milo's direction and the performances. You know, you eventually find it.
Arthur, you're not going to find another firm that's done more high-level consulting work for a relatively small pharmaceutical company like yours. Remember, my firm helped the governor craft a plan to swap property taxes for sales taxes in his last budget reform. Tell me that didn't save Dexter Carr a bundle.
Oh, it did, Olivia. But since I'm specifically looking to hire you, I need to know what you yourself can do.
Whenever you need. You know my accomplishments. You've seen my resume.
I mean White House influence. Considering your family.
We're not lobbyists, Arthur. It states that clearly in the contract.
I just thought, since you have the president's ear.
I don't. Is that going to be a problem?
Excuse me, Miss Taylor.
Do I know you?
My name is Aaron Pierce.
Aaron Pierce, hooray,
hey,
everyone's
there
here.
He is. There he
okay,
is.
But we're also introducing the president's daughter.
Right.
Played by Sprague. And Olivia is the character's name. And this was another thing that I had pushed. We had talked about this character, a character like this, and kind of went away from it. And I kind of pushed, like, now's the time. We need to introduce her. She'll provide us with so many more stories in the White House.
Hmm.
And my nagging eventually worked, and this went right to the wire of the scene, which is why I allowed myself to play this role, just because I felt I earned it. The only reason this scene is in here is because I campaigned for it so hugely. And I think it's great. I mean, Aaron's involvement and the introduction of Olivia was huge, I think, for the rest of the season. And they have a very exciting scene inside the White House, the two of them trying to escape with the attack.
Outside.
That's right. She did such a wonderful job. I thought she was just great. And she looks like Cherry's daughter.
Yeah, she does, actually.
She could be.
Why?
Larry asked for it. Something to do with the firewall assessment.
Larry wants it.
This is a very... Their relationship is so interesting and odd. The Sean-Janish relationship, because he is... He seems so antisocial, and she's snarky, and you know, it's a real dysfunctional working relationship, regardless of whether you think she's the mole or he's the mole. Because honestly, when we start the season, we're not sure who the mole is.
Right.
Quite honestly, we let the story sort of unfold, and we decide later who's the best candidate.
Right.
And so I would say that when we started with Sean and Janice, we didn't know. We didn't know what their ulterior motives were. We just said, you know, this is their working dynamic. And later you decide. We decided it was Sean.
Mm, right.
But it does create, he does create a really interesting character where you're not really, you don't know what to think about him. Janine ad-libbed that little thing. He calls her bitch, and I think in the script she just goes, thanks. Like referring to, thanks for giving me the thing.
Right.
And Janine came back with, you're a little bitch. Which is just hysterical. But that's the kind of things that she brought to the character.
Marika, we gotta go.
So now Marika's just off to come and meet Ike Dubaku. And tailed closely by Jack Bauer, I think. Am I right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. But this is great. She says, she basically has put this on Renee now. You're the FBI. I don't know who this guy Jack Bauer is, but you're the FBI. You make sure she's safe. And that onus being put on Renee weighs really heavily because she knows that they're putting her in a dangerous situation. Mm. And she and Jack are going to talk about it here anyway, a little bit more about what it means.
If you get into trouble, you can signal us by dialing.
Yeah, for instance, here. She's trying to give her some kind of out, some kind of assurance that something can happen. And Jack won't allow it. Jack won't allow her to do that. And I think it was as originally scripted, there was a little bit more tension between the two of them, Jack and Renee.
What the hell are you doing?
She was scared. I wanted her to know there was another option waiting for us to swoop in.
If we're going to find Kabako, there are other options. She would have seen.
Yeah, there was just the lines were a little bit different, but the intent's the same. I mean, basically, it's, Renee is more scared that we're putting her, but she's playing it a little differently. She's playing it a little angry, which works.
Innocent people get hurt. That's a reality. At least she got to make a choice to be involved, to do the right thing, which is a lot more than I can say for DeBacco's other victims. We have one job here, is to get DeBacco. Outside of that, don't get involved.
Do you know where they shot this? Where is this? Is this Universal? This isn't Universal. No, this is a real. This is a real building, right? Yeah, but are you in the car? You're not even in the shot.
Somebody comes to pick her up. Actually, at this right. point.
That's right. That's right. She's bringing to meet you. That's correct. I forgot that. Okay. Yeah, that would be silly because they could just run out and grab you if you would come. That's right. That was one of those things as we're writing the story going, wait, he can't come and pick her up.
Exactly.
Jack would just try to capture him right there.
You upload the tracking grid to Agent Walker's PDA?
No, I'll have to direct you.
Just keep us close.
And this is the setup to discovering that Janice, is in the system. Which certainly, again, points to her being the mole.
Right.
I mean, here she is, and she's going to be mirroring Chloe's terminal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming anyone who's listening to this has already watched the episode, so I'm just assuming that you believe that she's the mole. If you're all going right now, there's no way she's the mole, then I failed miserably. So I'm hoping that by now you're
first.
Going, oh my God, yeah. Janice is a mole. And yes, I apologize. There's another mole in the bureaucrat at FBI, like there is at CTU. But you know what? It's very hard to tell a story, a thriller, a spy thriller, without there being people working for the bad guys within. It's just nearly impossible.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
You're talking about, you're not talking about. It's the real time element too. The real time of telling. We're telling this in a 24-hour period. Mm. It's very hard to tell it without doing that. Although we try, we valiantly try, and sometimes we just have to give into it. So we hope we execute it well.
On our street, crossing Hampshire Avenue.
You're less than a mile behind the target car.
Copy that.
So when we say Hampshire Avenue, I don't even know if there is a Hampshire Avenue in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of street names and things. I saw the Connecticut Avenue Tunnel or this, and some of these things I know I'm making up.
Right.
I'm just going, well, there'd be streets in the name of states because we know Pennsylvania Avenue is where the White House is. But what other names? Would there be named after presidents? Would there be a Taft Avenue? Would there be a... So you're going to hear all these street names that, quite honestly, I don't even know are in Washington, D.C. So if anyone's listening, I apologize.
It's also tracking grid.
What?
I don't know. It just glitched out.
We can't afford to lose them, Jack. I gave this woman my word we'd protect her.
I know. Chloe, get it back up.
We're doing our best here, Jack.
Right, this was another...
to the grid, right?
Well, this was another buy where Janice just yanks out her key, magic key card. Or thing that suddenly makes it all blank out.
Mm.
And a lot of people, I mean, some people here said, why, that just seems weird. You're just going, just go with it. Just go with it.
Yeah,
it works for the story.
Office was mirroring my terminal.
And I think it works, personally. I get it, that if you were tapped into somebody else's terminal and you turn something off,
it could have a blip.
Yeah, that it has to sort of reboot itself. And we played something like that, actually, earlier in the season, I think. I thought I saw something like that. Oh, it was when, I know exactly what it was, when Chloe was helping Jack and Tony escape from FBI, and Janice was trying to fight her off.
Right.
There was a whole thing where she had to, the system goes off and it has to reboot. And,
what's going on?
Anyway. I probably shouldn't point out when we repeat ourselves on the show. We haven't enough fans doing that already, but I find it interesting. I find it interesting just because, look, we're not trying to repeat ourselves. We're just, this is the best way to tell a story. This is clearly L.A.
That's a good no-LA right
I
now.
Think,
no,
I think you think it looks...
Yeah,
see,
it
I don't
looks
think
more
it looks,
like L.A. than Washington to
I
me.
Think it does, but... Mm. I think we see street signs even that don't look like... They look very...
Right.
Like big blue street signs that are clearly L.A. street signs. But, you know, we could only shoot just so much in D.C.
I must say it was great to be in D.C. To do the shooting, yeah.
I bet.
It was a lot of fun.
You're walking by all those monuments.
Yeah,
and,
it was really something. Although the weather was cold, but it was quite something.
The was called in for the vehicle. Occupants armed and dangerous to be apprehended with decisive force.
Issued by who?
FBI, this office. There's no attribution, but the routing code's real.
This was right, so this is the, this is going, wait a minute, this is something new. Janice didn't issue any warrants. This is, what's this about? Listen carefully. Again, set up to who the real mole is. It ain't Janice. It's Sean, who we'll see in a second.
You need to release these people right now.
Right.
Janice will explain.
Thank you. So is O'Brien here to replace you?
I don't know. No. Larry's using her for some kind of covert operation with Jack Bauer. They're tracking a car to Dubai.
Why would he keep us in the dark about something like that?
I don't know.
So you kind of know, I think, that she's not the mole because she's telling him the truth. She's not disguising what she is, what she's doing.
She got my name wrong, though.
What did she say?
Akadu or something.
Akadu? Really? you should have shot her.
Yeah.
If anyone mispronounces your name, you should shoot him.
Left the gun that time.
Ross is running this op on his own. It took me some time to tap into his phone line. He's on with Metro right now.
And I'm sure a lot of people from episode one were already suspecting Sean was up to no good. And
let's go back.
Here's your confirmation. That's Washington. I believe that where he's walking is Washington, yeah. Because those are those kind of townhouses thing. We don't have those in L.A.
Why are we still helping him?
So that's really interesting. We shot that in D.C., but we didn't shoot the...
Well, it might have been shot on lock because we were...
Including mine?
I mean everyone.
Well, we can't really see. Yeah, that's. I think that's the universal lot, isn't it?
Oh, is it really?
I think so.
Oh, interesting. Oh, okay, so. All right.
That cafe in the corner.
Right, yeah, that looked good. Looked like D.C. to me.
Yeah.
I would have said that was D.C.
Yes, it has to do with the terrorist threats that happened this morning.
Lots of good stuff happening, setting up for 10. It's this is very much a setup episode.
Right.
Everything's going to pay off.
Very exciting.
And I knew it when I was writing it. I said, this is setup, but...
Hello?
You got a problem.
What is it?
Your girlfriend's been turned by the FBI.
I don't believe you.
They met with her a half hour ago, told her who you really are.
That's impossible. Marika would never do this.
I got it from my source.
And this is me waiting for her.
She agreed to lead them to you using her cell phone as a tracker.
Right.
So I'm at this hidden location actually waiting for Marika to come, and then this phone call comes in, and he tells me that she's been turned, which...
Now, I think we believe you're going to kill her.
I've completely flipped my mind.
Now,
and,
because that was a point of contention. Some people didn't think we were going to get that. But I think you're going to kill her. And in fact, you don't, because you want to take a stolen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that was great.
Well, yeah. Oh, there's that awful David Fury. yeah, it was fun, Hakeem.
Yeah,
thank you.
Fun,
this
was
your first time
doing
a commentary.
Yeah.
But it won't be your last. We're going to do a lot more. We're going to go on the road. Thank you for this.
No way, Dave.
I'm very proud of this episode.
Yeah,
I hope
great
people,
episode,
people enjoyed
David,
it.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching.
Yeah, thanks for watching, guys.
And listening to us ramble.
Mm.